from the clubhouse to the tailgates and beyond.
Fly ball, deep left, gone!
Welcome to Brewers Weekly. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome in. It has been a minute since we have done a proper Brewers Weekly here in the podcast feed. Welcome in. I'm Dominic Catronio. If you're listening live on WTMJ, this one's audio only this week. We've had a scheduling conflict, a lot of stuff that went down this week, so this is an audio only show, and it's pre-taped as it usually is here on WTMJ. There also won't be another Brewers Weekly next week, as we have a scheduling conflict on WTMJ, so there won't be an episode next week, but we still created one for you here on this Thursday off day after 16 days in a row. Post-game shows after every single one of them. Here we are trying to find some new topics to talk about. So, welcome in. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for joining us here. What a week. And thanks to everybody who's been sharing the show and interacting with the show. Obviously, the Cubs bring a bump that is a little bit more listenership, but the numbers have been greatly appreciated. There have been a few more ratings. I appreciate every single one of you guys. If you are here listening live on WTMJ, remember you can subscribe. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. In case you miss any of our Brewers content, you can find it right there on your home of the Brewers. And if you're already a loyal podcast listener, just go ahead and drop a 5 stars. Leave a review if you so are inclined. It would really, really go a long way for us. I really do appreciate that. Everybody here in the building at WTMJ. What is this episode going to do? Dom, they just swept the Cubs. You just said everything you needed to say this week with two epic games of the year type candidates. I mean, what else is there to say? That's kind of how I feel right now. I don't know what else to come up with. This is where a little bit of writer's block comes in. So we're going to start with a status check of just level set the National League, as there weren't many games on this Thursday, and the two games that matter to the Brewers have gone final, so we'll talk about that here in this first segment. We're also going to talk just projected how I'm feeling. No numbers, just straight vibes, just straight gut reaction of, okay, what do we think the lineup is going to be versus a lefty and versus a righty in October if the playoffs started tomorrow, which they don't, and we could be very wrong about this, but let's go ahead and dive into what we think about that. We'll also just give you a quick little level set on where things stand with the rotation, leverage bullpen, who could be available, what do you want to do in a potential NLDS situation, how many pitchers do you want to carry. We'll talk about the roster rules that come with the postseason. And finally, I just want to do a couple of award thoughts where it's not necessarily predictions of the whole National League, but just where some Brewers deserve some more consideration. I know we've talked about that from time to time, but I just kind of want to put it out there. And looking at the numbers and trying to crunch, like, there have been some really great seasons here in Milwaukee that when you compare it to the rest of the league, they are really, really, really good seasons. So that's coming up at the very end of the program. Let's just start here with a full system check. Okay, the Brewers have a 10-game lead here in the NL Central. Both the Brewers and Cubs were idle on Thursday. The Brewers essentially making it an 11-game lead thanks to holding the tiebreaker. Thus, the magic number to win the NL Central is down to 5. So mathematically, you could clinch as soon as Sunday. What you would need for that to happen, you would need some help from the Pirates. So first of all, you would need to win at least the first two games against Cincinnati. Okay, let's say you win the first two games against Cincinnati. You would also simultaneously need Pittsburgh to win the first two games against Chicago. Okay, but let's say the Brewers only split the first two games, but Pittsburgh helps out and wins the first two games against the Cubs. That would mean Pittsburgh would need to sweep the Cubs and the Brewers would need to take 2 out of 3 from the Reds, or vice versa. If the Brewers sweep the Reds, they would need the Pirates to win the series against the Cubs for them to be popping bottles coming up on Sunday. I know they can mathematically claim a tiebreaker on Friday for postseason berth. I don't think that's what anybody cares about right now. I think the division is the only thing on anybody's mind. And that gets complicated because of head-to-head still to come with those two teams still fighting for the last playoff spot. That you're guaranteed to have a loss somewhere in there between Arizona and San Diego. Even if a team goes 3-0 against the other, you're guaranteed to have one of those teams fall out. So that's something that gets a little hairy, but they could technically clinch a postseason berth as soon as Friday night. But that's your one scenario. if the Brewers are going to clinch this weekend. It's the Brewers sweep the Reds and the Pirates take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, or the Pirates sweep the Cubs and the Brewers take 2 out of 3 from Cincinnati. Okay? Those are the only scenarios that you can clinch at home. Otherwise, you're going to do it on this three-city road trip coming up. As for the standings and the games that mattered in today's action, the Braves salvage the finale with the Tampa Bay Rays. They avoid the sweep. They drop 2 out of 3, and now they get ready for a big series once again with the Philadelphia Phillies. Also, speaking of those Phillies, they just lost 2-1 to the Astros, thus losing the series. Yoan Duran gave up a homer to Cam Smith in a tie game in the top of the ninth inning. So, Philly drops the finale there against the Astros. Why do we bring up those games? Because if the Brewers are going to be the one seed, that is the matchup that would feed into Milwaukee. Currently, Philadelphia holds a one-game lead on Chicago. But keep in mind, Chicago has the tiebreaker on the Phillies, so all they have to do is end up tied at the end of the year, and that best-of-three series is in Chicago, whereas the Phillies have to win it outright to bring that to the bank at Citizens Bank Park, and that trio of lefties could really be... I mean, it gets interesting, too, because now you're thinking about every game mattering for both of those rotations, that you might need a start from Christopher Sanchez or Zach Wheeler or Jesus Luzardo on the last day of the season, which could impact their availability coming up in a wild card series with only 2.5-ish weeks left to go. But the remaining schedules for those two teams to keep an eye out for. The Phillies, as we mentioned, they are going to Atlanta. Then they have a weird 2-game set in Washington and then 4 against the Mets. And then they finish at home with the Brewers and the Rays, arguably the hardest schedule remaining of the teams in this picture that we're looking at right now. As for the Cubs, we already mentioned they're facing the Pirates this weekend. Then they host the Atlanta Braves for 3. They'll probably see Chris Sale on the back end of that, but the middle of that game, the middle of that series might be a little bit of a hogwash between what back end starters are going to get the nod there. Then the Cubs go to Cincinnati, they come home for Miami, and then they go to Boston to finish the regular season. So they are struggling as far as the teams that they are chasing. Again, they already have the tiebreaker on Philly. They also have the tiebreaker on Arizona and San Diego. So they don't have to worry about those two teams duking it out for the final spot here in the division. The other thing that we're keeping an eye out for is the number one seed in the National League. And that's where we bring the Dodgers into play. So the Brewers at 91-56, best record in baseball. They are still a game and a half clear of the Dodgers. And you can add essentially a half game to that, make it 2, because remember, LA has to win outright. The Brewers own the tiebreaker on the Dodgers. LA's remaining schedule is one of the easiest in baseball. LA finishes with 3 in Miami, 4 in Cincinnati, 3 at home against San Francisco, 3 at home against San Diego, and then 3 on the road in San Francisco. I mean, there's only one playoff team in that chase, and that is 3 against San Diego. Keep that in mind. As for LA trying to fend off Atlanta to earn that bye, that's going to be a very entertaining race here down the stretch, because right now those two teams are separated by 3.5 games all of a sudden. And Atlanta, their schedule lightens up on the back end. Atlanta gets Philly here this weekend. They go to Chicago, like we mentioned. Then they go to Houston, and Houston's still hanging on to the top of the AL West crown right now. Then they come home for Cincy, and then the Braves finish in Miami against the Marlins. Now, all they need to do with LA is tie them, and then they would get that 2 seed and have the bye with the Brewers. Now, in case you're worried about, oh, the Brewers not claiming that tiebreaker technically head-to-head with Atlanta yet, well, there's currently 5 games apart between these two teams. And still, for Atlanta, they've got 15 games remaining. The Brewers also have 15 games remaining. So, I mean, you're talking about a 5-10 stretch for the Brewers and a 10-5 stretch for the Braves. I just don't see that happening. You know, knock on wood and all that fun stuff. But I think the Brewers are in good shape there as far as not falling out of a bye situation, which is massive news for what they need to do to set up their pitching, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in this program. But finally, The last thing I wanted to touch on here when we just look at the status check and what the Brewers are trying to do here down the stretch. You're getting ready for the Reds this weekend. You get three with Cincinnati, the last time you're facing them. You get three at Pittsburgh Tuesday through Thursday of next week. Then you go to Baltimore, to Philadelphia, and then home for St. Louis. So if you are really that worried about the divisional tiebreaker and what the Brewers need to do in order to claim the best divisional record, because reminder, when you don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker to decide who gets the advantage, you go to divisional record. So how did the Braves do against the NL East, and how did the Brewers do against the NL Central? And right now, that has tightened up thanks to a sweep over the Cubs. At this moment, the Brewers have a 28-15 record against their own division, with nine more games waiting to go. The Braves only have six more games waiting to go, granted three of them coming up this weekend against Philly, and they are 30-16. So if you want to map things out, let's say the Braves go 500 in their remaining six divisional games, and they go 33-19 to finish the year. All the Brewers would have to do is then go 6-3 to take it outright, where they would be 34-18 against their division. But if they're able to go 5-4 in those nine games against their division, they are once again tied for the tiebreaker that's supposed to be the next thing on the list. So where do we go from there? This is where it gets silly. It goes to your intra-league record. So how did you do against the rest of the National League? And gosh darn it, know what these two teams are right now against the National League? The exact same record. They are currently 62-40 against the NL right now. So that could get very complicated at the very end of the year. So keep that in mind when you look at the divisional records, that if the Brewers go 5-4 in their nine games against Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and St. Louis to end the year, it would require the Braves going 500 or worse for that to become a different factor. So we'll cross that bridge when we get there, once we know the Braves' divisional record is locked in, which will be locked in coming up in a week's time. They're done with the division. Actually, I should say at the very end of the year, they finished the year with Miami. So let's hope it doesn't get that complicated, shall we? The Brewers have a five-game lead on the Braves to hold a bye, regardless if they're the one seed or the two seed. Okay, that's your level set right now. Things are looking pretty darn good right now for the crew. So let's go ahead and start licking our chops and looking ahead and trying to decide what's the best lineup for the Brewers. What are the things that we are monitoring here for the last 15 games of the season? How can they set themselves up for success in a potential NLDS matchup? And maybe that depends on who they face. More on that in a moment on this taped edition of Brewers Weekly on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for joining us here. Taped edition of Brewers Weekly continuing on. If you're in the podcast feed, no worry for you. Brewers getting ready for the Reds this weekend. And a reminder that Friday night's game is on Apple TV Plus. And a reminder also on Apple TV Plus, you have the toggle to listen to the radio live synced up with the telecast. So it's a really easy button. I recommend it. It's super easy to use. You can listen to us here on WTMJ with Jeff, with Lane. Actually, no Jeff this weekend since he's got football. So it'll be Lane and Josh on the call this weekend as the Reds come to town for 6:45 on Friday night, 6:10 on Saturday night, and then finally on Sunday back to 1:10 to wrap up this homestand. And the Brewers aren't back home until the final three games of the regular season. Now, this segment is going to be all about thinking about the lineup. And I think we saw a little preview. We talked about that over the week against the Cubs, how we saw a little bit of a tweak in the lineup, and I think that was sort of an indicator of what's to come for the crew. Let's start with a predicted lineup against a right-handed pitcher. And this was the data that we saw from Wednesday's finale against Kevin Gausman and the Cubs, because we saw one little tweak that we'll get to here in just a moment to explain why that sends up a little smoke signal of what to expect for the Brewers. So my predicted lineup against a right-handed pitcher in the postseason looks like this. I've actually got Jackson Chourio leading off. I really love Chourio leading off a lot more than I love Terang leading off. I think that it's a better matchup. Terang's your RBI leader, which is a shocking sentence to say, but Terang's a great two-hole hitter. He can hit with men on base. He's got no problem taking pitches, letting Chourio steal, whatever that may be. So I've got Chourio leading off and left. I got Bryce Terang batting second, playing second. And then assuming health, Jake Bowers batting third and playing first base. This is going to be a hot topic for Andrew Vaughn versus righties. What will the Brewers do to just squeeze out a little bit more offense into October? I remember at the end of last season, I looked to Adam McAlvey of MLB.com and I said, hey man, I really think Jake Bowers is going to get some starts in the outfield this postseason. Because remember, he was really just starting to show signs of life when he came off the injured list from that shoulder impingement last year. And I had asked Murph about that a little bit toward the end of the regular season. He kind of looked at me like, you know something that we didn't think anybody knew. So, and that was right. Jake Bowers was starting games in left field in the postseason. Granted, depends on the righty. I wouldn't be surprised if they put Bowers in right and Vaughn into this lineup as a first baseman, depending on the repertoire of the righty in particular they're facing. I still don't think it's likely that Vaughn gets many starts against a right-handed starter, because they naturally would love to have him come off the bench and hit for a Garrett Mitchell when a lefty comes into the game, right? Or even a Sal Frelick when a lefty comes into the game, because those guys are in my lineup. So let's resume here. Versus a right-handed starting pitcher in October. Chourio leading off and left. Bryce Terang hitting second at second. And Jake Bowers hitting third, playing first base. The cleanup man is William Contreras. I think that's a no-brainer. And I think after all the drama of people complaining about his August and his end of July, like what's going wrong with William, he has turned that ship around. He's hitting nearly 350 for about 2.5-3 weeks' time right now. He's scalding the baseball. He has made a complete turnaround to his season, and credit to him for being able to find that adjustment. Batting fifth, again, against the righty, I've got Yelly as the DH. I think that you're a soft platoon right now with Christian Yelich heading into October, especially getting the starts against right-handed pitching. I could see him sitting on the bench against left-handed pitching, which you'll hear in just a moment. So one more time. Chourio, Terang, Bowers is 1-2-3. Contreras, Yelich, Mitchell is my 4-5-6. I've got Mitchell batting sixth because I think that creates a little bit of a pocket where you can put Andrew Vaughn into this game or even Luis Lara into this game. The reason why I want to create that pocket where you have back-to-back lefties and 3 out of 4 lefties is because you know you've got Vaughn, or even Gary for that matter, lurking if you so wish to go to them in this moment. I think that Mitchell has also quietly improved his at-bats against lefties lately. He's not afraid to go the opposite field. He had that great day against David Peterson on Tuesday against Chicago. That's just one lefty, but it's something to keep in mind. And again, it also matters matchup-based. Does the bullpen you're facing have a ton of leveraged lefties that you're worried about? Does the bullpen you're facing, is their closer right-handed or left-handed? Like, these are things that matter even in lineup construction, so keep that in mind. Batting seventh, I've got Joey Ortiz at third base, even against a right-handed pitcher. Murph wasn't shy about it on Sunday after the tough game for David Hamilton when he committed 2 errors, unofficially 3 errors, had a rough day. We've talked about his arm. We've talked about this many, many times. And Joey Ortiz has had just as good of a second half as somebody like William, as somebody like Joey, or as somebody like Jackson Chourio. And I think that when we saw him get the start, going for a sweep right on right with Kevin Gausman, again, on Wednesday, that was an indicator to me saying, yeah, Joey's your everyday third baseman moving forward. Hamilton will still get starts. It's not meant to, you know, say signal saying, oh, we want David Hamilton to start a postseason game. I do not believe they want David Hamilton to start a postseason game. I really don't. Even if it's a tough righty for Joey Ortiz, because they have nothing to worry about with Joey defensively at third base. And then you've also got the benefit of Hamilton as a pinch runner late in this game, if you need to run for Contreras, if you need to run for Vaughn, if you need to run for somebody late in this contest, it could really come in handy for them down the stretch. Eighth, I've got Sal Frelick in right field. Now, I know a lot of folks might be thinking, well, Dom, what about Luis Lara? Why not Lara? Well, Lara has struggled as a left-handed batter in the big leagues. I know he's a switch hitter. I understand the talent and the ability that that takes for a 21-year-old kid to be a switch hitter in his first 2 months in the big leagues. And his minor league numbers also bore out the fact that he has a little bit more pop from the right side than he does the left side. And just to give you the numbers while we're at it here, when Lara is batting left-handed, meaning he's facing a right-handed pitcher, he has 28 strikeouts in 113 plate appearances, so about a 20% strikeout rate. He's not known for striking out all that often, but only a 364 slug. A 709 OPS is very respectable for a 21-year-old switch hitter. The one homer, though, of course, coming off of a position player, so that's kind of skewing that slugging a little bit even further. Left-handed, very few plate appearances, only 55 plate appearances. The numbers aren't great. 255 batting average, a 642 OPS, but I'm going to trust the underlying bat speed numbers, discipline numbers. He's a natural right-handed hitter that I need to make sure that he's in his best-case scenario in a postseason game, batting from the right side. I think in the future, this is not going to be a platoon, but Lara, for the sake of winning as many games as possible, is going to be sitting against a right-handed pitcher. And then for Frelick, I'm going to continue to point it out. He's going to be dragged down by his full season numbers while he was playing hurt earlier this year. Since coming off the injured list, he has been hitting the ball harder than he has all season long. His plate discipline has been solid. He plays perfectly fine defense in right field, Gold Glove caliber defense in right field. He's a good base runner. There's a lot to still like from Sal Frelick. Again, I know the season numbers are going to wear him down. But I just would encourage you, just like we talked about with Jake Bowers last year, Jake Bowers' season numbers were terrible before he went on the injury list with a right shoulder impingement. He came back from that impingement, and then he started to show signs of what he's carried over into this season. I think Sal Frelick is healthy enough. They're certainly still playing through something, it sounds like, but it's better than it's been all season to this point. So Sal is my starting right fielder against a right-handed pitcher. Finally, Cooper Pratt bats ninth. This is going to be something that's in the same in both lineups versus lefties and versus righties. There's not much time to be spent here. He's your best defensive option. He is going to be your shortstop, and he's going to be your guy that you look forward to at the bottom of this order to turn things over to Churio at the top. So one more time against righties. It'll be Churio leading off, Bryce Terang hitting second, and then Jake Bowers hitting third. Cleanup spot goes to William Contreras. Christian Yelich bats fifth. Garrett Mitchell sixth. Then the bottom third will be Joey Ortiz 7th, Sal Frelick 8th, and Cooper Pratt 9th. I think that's a pretty darn good lineup against right-handed pitching. That would leave your bench, assuming the Brewers go with a four-man bench. I don't think they're going to carry a third catcher in October, because if you carry an extra catcher in October, you're going to carry one less pitcher, which you technically could do. Your limit goes down to 26. There's no limit on position players you can carry, but there is a limit of 13 pitchers. So let's say you carry 12 pitchers and 14 position players. You've already got your pinch runner built in David Hamilton. You've already got another pinch runner potentially in Luis Lara. So maybe you do carry a third catcher, 14 position players, 12 pitchers in October in order to have Gary Sanchez be another pinch hit capable bat in case you want to have that opportunity against a left-handed pitcher. Now, versus southpaws. The only key differences here against lefties will be Andrew Vaughn will be starting the game at first base, and I have him batting third. I have Jake Bowers currently batting fifth, but I can be persuaded to flip him and Bryce Terang to have Bowers hit second and Terang hit fifth. I would not be opposed to that. So as of now, I've got Churio leading off. I've got Terang hitting second, but could be Bowers. I've got Vaughn hitting third. Contreras hitting fourth, then the interchangeable Terang or Bowers hitting fifth. Luis Lara starting the game in center field, like we just talked about with the right-left splits. I've got Yelly still DHing. I still have Yelly in there unless they carry three catchers. If they're carrying three catchers, Gary Sanchez is DHing here. Batting eighth, it would be Joey Ortiz, no surprise, and batting ninth would be Cooper Pratt. So you see the very few questions we have about this lineup. And again, it's matchup-based. The main question that we will see answered in these final 2 weeks, will they carry a third catcher in October? Mind you, and I've said this before on a post-game show, but I'll reiterate here, have you noticed Gary Sanchez's numbers when he starts a game? He very quietly has had incredible play discipline this season. And I know we've all liked to see more home runs from him, but that's life when you don't play every day right now. In his 58 starts this season, he's got an 822 OPS with a 374 on-base percentage. When he is starting a game, whether it's DH or catcher or, heaven forbid, first base, he almost has the exact number of walks and strikeouts. And, well, when you include hit-by-pitches, he's got 46 walks and hit-by-pitches and 45 strikeouts. Sneaky on-base machine. And is somebody that could be a threat in October if he's going to be the DH against left-handed pitching. If you're facing the Phillies and you're getting Lizardo and Sanchez, I think Gary's going to be in there. If you're facing the Cubs, and let's say you would likely only face the likes of, say, Kevin Gausman, they'd probably throw as many righties as they can at the Brewers. But I digress. Don't sleep on the fact that a third catcher debate is going to continue into October. So all that makes sense? Cool. So let's shift gears. Let's talk about the pitching. We also have a roster move to report as well as, the most predictable move came through during the off day here on this Thursday. So we'll talk about the pitching side of things, what's expected for the crew, coming up on Brewers Weekly, taped edition on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's keep on going, and let's talk about the pitching now, shall we? Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Rolling on with the taped edition of Brewers Weekly, Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. Won't have to spend as long on the pitching because I just don't think there's that many questions about the pitching right now, aside from the obvious who is a third and fourth starter. Before we jump into predictive what are we looking out for here down the stretch, the move that is sort of predictable and it just makes you a little bummed out when it actually does come through that fast, that comes on an off day, that Brandon Sproat has been optioned to AAA Nashville after being failed to be trusted with an 8-1 lead in the ninth inning and three outs to get against the Chicago Cubs. A corresponding move will be announced over the weekend. Now, to lead this into a little bit of weekend discussion before we talk about the rest of the pitching staff, I wonder if that's a smoke signal that there's going to be a spot start somewhere this weekend. They did not commit to Robert Gasser starting on Sunday yet, but we did learn that Dustin May will indeed start on Friday. They were non-committal about Kyle Harrison either coming out of the bullpen or starting a game coming up. His next day would be Saturday. Potentially you pair Shane Drouin with him coming out of the bullpen if you want it to be a shorter two times through the order, keep things going sharp for Kyle Harrison. I know he just faced these Reds, which makes things a little bit difficult, but that's certainly on the table. And again, they have not committed to Robert Gasser starting on Sunday, so a corresponding move technically could be not just for a reliever. It could be a Coleman Crow. It could be Garrett Stallings for relief. It could be Jared Kanick for relief, for all we know. I mean, there's a couple of options on the 40-man roster, but we will find out on Friday. As this third starter debate continues to ratchet up, I think we need to hammer home for the million times over, even in these final 15 games. A lot of the debate over who is the third starter will be anchored in, well, who are they facing? Because when you look at this Cubs lineup, if the Brewers are facing Chicago, it's the best lineup against left-handed pitching in baseball, right? I know Robert Gasser pitched well twice in these last 2 weeks against the Cubs, and he may be the logical choice to be your number three right now, but do you want him in a best of five to make a start potentially in a do-or-die game? That's the question. Now, hopefully you're not in a do-or-die situation come game three, but that's something to monitor. And if Dustin May gets right over these next probably three starts remaining for Dustin, so now the fact that we know he's going on Friday, if the Brewers want to quickly get back to a normal rotation, I would imagine he would then go next Thursday against Pittsburgh. So the way ahead of ourselves look at the rotation could be Jacob Mizorowski on Tuesday against Pittsburgh, Logan Henderson on Wednesday against Pittsburgh, and then finally Dustin May potentially on Thursday, which would then line him up in Philadelphia. and that would probably end his regular season. So he's probably only got three starts remaining. Does Dustin May to prove whether or not he deserves to get some nods in the postseason this season? On Robert Gasser's front, I'm going to go ahead and operate with the assumption that he's going to start on Sunday, even though the Brewers listed him as TBD, but we shall wait and see. Finally, on the rotation front and on the heading into October, what do you want to see from your starting rotation? This has to do with the schedule. You need to get back on a 5-day pretty soon. And I think these off days make it ironically a little bit difficult to get back on a 5-day, given you're off today, you're off on Monday, and then you're off the following Monday. But we can assume and we can maybe hope that they put Miz on that 5-day schedule once again, where if he goes on Tuesday, potentially he goes as well on Sunday against the Orioles on that road trip. And then using the off day once again, he would likely go on 4 days rest and go on Friday in his final start at home against the Cardinals. And maybe that'll be a shortened start on purpose. But if you can get these next two of these next three starts for Miz back on a 5-day rotation, that would be massive. Because, a reminder, it's different than last year's playoff schedule. Remember in the NLDS, you had that extra off day between game one in game two. Television does that, and Major League Baseball does that in order to stagger the American League and National League playoffs to make sure that there aren't a bunch of games happening all on the same days. And furthermore, it helps them avoid NFL Sundays come World Series time. So this year, you do not have that extra off day, meaning if Jacob Mizorowski is going to start game one of an NLDS, assuming he does, which would be Saturday, October 3rd. That would mean if he's going to go on a 5-day rotation, he would only be available for game five. Now, if you want him to start on short rest, which is something he has never done before in his career, would he go on Wednesday the 7th, which would be game four, if necessary for the Brewers? I don't know. Again, I don't foresee the Brewers using any of their young arms on short rest, especially somebody like Jacob Mizorowski, unless he absolutely insists on it. But I think if it depends on what the series is at. Let's say the Brewers are in a similar situation like they did last year against the Cubs, where you have, let's say you win the first two games at home, and you guarantee at worst you're coming back home for a game five. In that scenario, you hold back Miz and have him pitch game five. But if you're down 0-2 and all of a sudden game four is coming up and you're down 1-2, you might be looking, hey, Miz, can you give us four or five innings, right? I think that's, and then you figure it out for game five. So that's something that's on my radar right now. And the other thing about that lack of short rest, assuming Miz doesn't start game four, if he starts a game one and game five situation, that means you're likely only getting one start out of Logan Henderson. But he could appear, you know, on a 5-day rotation in game five, potentially out of the bullpen. But then, of course, that impacts what's available in the NLCS coming up if you are lucky enough to move on. So it gets a little complicated because of all this time on the 6-man rotation. I'm a little bit worried and a little bit ready to see if the Brewers can recalibrate their starting rotation and get it back to where it needs to be, and make sure that they're available as quickly as possible coming up in October. Then, of course, in the CS, it's 2 off day, 3 off day, 2. So you're going to get two starts out of both Miz and Henderson if that series goes long enough. Okay, that's a quick look at the pitching. I know we were going to talk about bullpen, but McGill's got the 9th, Uribe's got the 8th, Ashby's got the 7th. The leverage guys of Hall, Patrick, Senzatella, those are sort of your Swiss Army knives right now. Jojo Romero should also be considered a Swiss Army knife too. And then furthermore, maybe you move Drouin to the bullpen. Maybe you move somebody that we don't expect into the bullpen from the right side. Maybe Dustin May's available in the bullpen. So that goes into that calculus of, in a NLDS best of five, are you carrying 12 pitchers, which means you're likely carrying 4 starters and 8 relievers, which impacts them, or do you carry 3 starters and 9 relievers, but with bullpen bulk built in? These are all questions to be answered that are very matchup dependent. All right, let's take our last break of the program and talk a little bit about award season. And I want to give some love to not just Jake Bowers, but some other guys on this list for some hard work. Back with more in a moment on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, last segment here of the show. It's not going to be as long, but I just want to go through who should deserve some award votes. And we already handed the Cy Young Award to Jacob Mizorowski after his start on Tuesday against the Cubs. But where else could you see some hardware or some receiving votes, that sort of thing? A reminder, Major League Baseball recently has instituted the All-MLB first and second team, you know, a la MLB, or a la NBA and NFL, where you have, you know, the end-of-season recognition for the entire year, not just an All-Star recognition, which I actually love. And there have been times that the All-Star selection then has a terrible second half, but then the only way they get honored in a full season is for being noted as an All-Star. So who are the players that could be denoted as All-MLB first or second team that are on the Brewers? Jackson Churio is making a late push for outfield. Now, granted, outfield's always stacked. He doesn't have the loud counting numbers like 30 homers or 40 homers or 30-30 or anything like that. Maybe he can sneak into a second team, but I really hope Jake Bowers can somehow get a nod as a second team all first base, because that's also loaded here in baseball, right? You've got the guys like Bryce Harper. You've got Matt Olson. You've got Ben Rice. It is massively loaded. And I really hope that for Jake Bowers, he can get the recognition, because he actually got a little bit of pub over on Baseball Savant today, talking about how the best hitter on the best team is getting it done. He's extremely patient. He's in the top five in walks in all of baseball. It's been a marvelous year for Jake Bowers, and I hope he gets some All-MLB recognition. And I talked about this with J.R. Radcliffe on the Microbrew podcast earlier this week leading into the Cubs series. Things obviously have changed since then, but I still believe Trevor McGill should at least be getting a strong consideration for second-team All-MLB reliever. And we know Mason Miller is likely going to win reliever of the year. But, man, it wasn't a blown save on Tuesday night, mind you, because it was a tie game, but those were his first runs allowed in 18 outings. He has converted 18 consecutive saves. He has been the most important reliever for the Brewers, again, on the best team. I would hope he deserves some All-MLB votes. And speaking of Jackson Churio, though, have we completely shut the door on him receiving votes as an MVP candidate? Because very quietly, we've talked about how great his defense has been lately, and in doing so, it has actually increased his B WAR and his F WAR, you know, Baseball Reference WAR and Fangraphs WAR. Churio is now top 16 in the National League when it comes to Fangraphs WAR. I mean, he's almost 4 wins above replacement, and he spotted the rest of the league a month before the season began. Mind you, that's technically ahead of Jake Bowers, because Jake Bowers gets a penalty for not only being a first baseman, but also his defensive numbers aren't too kind to him. But we've been saying for months, Jake Bowers deserves MVP votes. But now when you look at them comparatively, you know, Churio's hitting .290. He's got a .491 slug, which is actually 1 point better than Bowers at the moment. Bowers is better on base by about 30 points right now, by about 50 points over Churio. He's got a better WRC plus than Churio over this time, but Churio could be 2020 at the end of the year. You've got multiple candidates, and remember, you vote 10 deep in MVP. I don't think both of them are going to sneak in as like the 10th and the 9th on the MVP ballot, but I've always been fascinated with the thought exercise of, can starting pitchers get MVP votes? And I think they should, quite frankly, because when you look at it, for Jacob Mizorowski, he's worth 6 wins above replacement right now, according to Fangraphs. That's the second most in the National League, like, regardless if you're a position player or a hitter. And I know Shohei Ohtani gets to count both, right? And Shohei's going to spend the rest of the year on the injured list. Shohei's worth 3.8 wins as a hitter, and then as a pitcher this season. Pulling it up now live on the air. Shohei, where are you? Shohei is worth 3 wins. So when you combine both, Shohei is ahead of Miz when you combine both hitter and pitcher, only ahead by about 0.8 of a win. That being said, can Niz finish the year at, say, like 6.3, 6.4 wins above replacement as the top National League? He's the Cy Young Award winner. What would the Brewers be without Jacob Mizrowski? I think it's a fair exercise to say Jacob Mizrowski probably deserves some MVP votes, and I'd love to see that. I think that would be a fascinating thought experiment where on my ballot, which I don't have, by the way, I'm not a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America, I would be struggling the most with who gets in from the best team, right? Do I vote for Churio or do I vote for Bowers, right? How high does Miz go? How much do I value somebody like James Wood, who's had a fantastic season over with the Nationals, improving on a lot of things this year despite that team not going to the postseason? He doesn't pitch for them. Like, it's not his fault. He's got 30 homers this season. Or do I value somebody like Corbin Carroll, who, I mean, what an amazing season. Yes, he only has 19 homers, but he leads baseball in triples, right? There are so many different ways to value MVP. Juan Soto, he's just put up the quietest near 3-4-5 season with a 152 WRC plus, like it's no big deal. And it's like, well, he's on the Mets. Do we really care about that? That sort of thing. So it's a fair argument to say pitchers should never be getting MVP votes, but I think this year is a little bit of an anomaly. And the last note on all of this is I would love to see, when it comes to Rookie of the Year, split it. You have a Pitching Rookie of the Year and an Offense Rookie of the Year. Because the debate between Sal Stewart, J.J. Weatherholt, Nolan McClain, and Logan Henderson is kind of reaching a fever pitch and a boiling point where I think maybe this is the kind of race that would force baseball to create a separate pitcher and hitter Rookie of the Year. That's my last note on all of that. Okay, that is a podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening live on WTMJ, remember, this was taped. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. I will talk to you tomorrow night after Brewers and Reds. Our producer has been Isaac Marquardt. I'm Dominic Catronio. Until then, keep on swinging.